The following is from page 72 of the printed edition. Uganda Overview. Land. Encompassing thick tropical rainforests, wide open savannas, countless rivers and lakes, and the majestic snow-capped Ruwenzori Range, Uganda is a country of amazing contrasts. It covers an area of 93,263 square miles and includes almost half of Lake Victoria, the largest lake in Africa. People. More than 85% of the population, which is made up of approximately 30 ethnic groups, live in rural areas. Language. Luganda is the most common of the more than 32 languages spoken in Uganda. The official languages are English and Swahili. Livelihood. Producing coffee, tea, cotton, and other cash crops, Uganda is an agricultural country. Most Ugandans are farmers who live on the food they grow for themselves, but some earn a living from fishing or tourism. Food. A steamed dish called matuke, made from plantains, is popular in most of the south of the country. Cornmeal, sweet potatoes, and bread made from millet or cassava flour are eaten with a variety of vegetables. Climate. Located on a plateau that drops from approximately 5,000 feet in the south to about 3,000 feet in the north, Uganda is a tropical country with a moderate climate. Most areas of the country have distinct dry and wet seasons. Uganda. For centuries, explorers searched for the source of the mighty Nile River, which snakes through half of Africa and empties into the Mediterranean Sea. Eventually, some explorers focused on Lake Victoria and its surrounding mountains as the primary sources of the Nile's perennial waters. In recent decades, many of the inhabitants of that area have been excited to discover the source of a more precious water, living water, that imparts everlasting life. John 4:10-14. This is the story of the people of Uganda who have been thirsting for righteousness. Matthew 5:6. The Pearl of Africa. Uganda, straddling the equator in the middle of Africa, is a beautiful land with a moderate climate. Melting glaciers high up in the majestic Ruwenzori Range, called the Mountains of the Moon, send sparkling waters cascading into myriads of rivers and lakes. Fertile soil and copious rain make Uganda ideal for growing coffee, tea, and cotton. Plantains, a cooking banana, grow abundantly and are used for matuke, one of Uganda's main dishes. Locals also eat cassava, maize meal, millet, and sorghum. This tropical country is home to lions, elephants, hippos, crocodiles, leopards, giraffes, and antelope, as well as chimpanzees, an assortment of fascinating monkeys, and the endangered mountain gorilla. Gorgeous birds fill the air with delightful melodies. Indeed, there is so much beauty in Uganda that the country has been hailed as the Pearl of Africa. Uganda's beautiful people. About 30 million people from approximately 30 ethnic groups inhabit Uganda. Many are religiously inclined and belong to Christendom's churches, but as elsewhere, formal worship is often interwoven with traditional religious practices. Ugandans are generally friendly and hospitable, and it is not uncommon for some to kneel when greeting or serving a person who is their senior. Sadly, though, in the 1970s and 1980s, this beautiful pearl and its precious people were severely scarred by political upheavals and the thousands of deaths that resulted. Moreover, the ravages of the AIDS epidemic have added to Uganda's grief. Under such circumstances, Jehovah's Witnesses have brought comfort and hope to these resilient people. True pioneers. The first record of the kingdom preaching work in Uganda dates back to 1931, when the South Africa branch office supervised the preaching work in all of Africa south of the equator. To open this tremendous territory, the branch assigned two pioneers, Robert Nisbet and David Norman, to preach in the area that is now Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania. Brothers Nisbet and Norman were determined to take the good news of the kingdom deep into the interior of Africa. They launched their campaign in Dar es Salaam on August 31, 1931, with 200 cartons of literature. From there, they went to the island of Zanzibar, and then on to the seaport of Mombasa, en route to the highlands of Kenya. They traveled by train, working the towns along the railway line to the eastern shores of Lake Victoria. Crossing the lake by steamship, the two intrepid pioneers arrived in Kampala, the capital of Uganda. After placing much literature, as well as subscriptions to the Golden Age, the two brothers continued by car even farther inland. 4 years later, in 1935, four pioneers from South Africa undertook another expedition into East Africa. They were Gray Smith and his wife, Olga, along with Robert Nisbet and his younger brother, George. With two well-equipped delivery vans fitted out as living quarters, these enterprising pioneers negotiated bad roads and battled their way through elephant grass up to 10 feet high. They often slept out in the wilds, says one report, and could see, hear, and feel the throb of the heart of Africa with its abundance of wildlife, roaring lions at night, peacefully grazing zebras and giraffes, and the ominous presence of rhinos and elephants. Undaunted, they visited towns that had never been reached with the kingdom message. While Gray and Olga Smith spent some time in Tanganyika, now Tanzania, Robert and George Nisbet headed for Nairobi, Kenya. Later, when colonial authorities ordered the Smiths to leave Tanganyika, they made their way to Kampala, Uganda. This time, however, conditions were not so favorable, and the Kampala police kept them under constant surveillance. Undeterred, in just 2 months, the Smiths placed 2,122 books and booklets and arranged for 6 public meetings. Eventually, though, the governor issued a deportation order, compelling the couple to leave Uganda. They traveled to Nairobi, where they met up with the Nisbet brothers, before returning to South Africa. With Jehovah's blessing, these preaching campaigns were exceptionally successful, and an excellent witness was given. Despite religious opposition and mounting pressure from colonial authorities, the pioneers distributed over 3,000 books and more than 7,000 booklets, besides obtaining many subscriptions. After these campaigns, many years passed before preaching activity was resumed in Uganda. Renewed activity. In April 1950, a young couple from England, brother and sister Kilminster, arrived in Kampala to set up house. They eagerly preached the good news and were delighted when two families, one Greek and the other Italian, responded to the kingdom message. Then, in December 1952, brothers Knorr and Henschel from the headquarters of Jehovah's Witnesses in New York visited Nairobi, Kenya. Brother Kilminster did not want to miss the opportunity to be with them, so he traveled all the way from Kampala to Nairobi. Brothers Knorr and Henschel provided the little group in Nairobi with encouragement and arranged for a congregation to be organized in Kampala. That fledgling congregation soon started producing good results, and a peak of 10 publishers shared in the ministry during the 1954 service year. During the same year, Eric Cook, from the branch office in southern Rhodesia, now Zimbabwe, visited East Africa and spent some time with a new congregation in Kampala. Although the brothers enjoyed a weekly congregation study of the Watchtower, they were not yet very active in the Christian ministry. So Brother Cook encouraged Brother Kilminster to conduct all the congregation meetings, including a weekly service meeting. To expand the preaching work further, Brother Cook emphasized the door-to-door ministry and lovingly provided a number of the publishers with personal training. Up till then, much of the preaching had been done among the Europeans living in Uganda. But Brother Cook observed that most native Ugandans in Kampala spoke Luganda. He suggested that in order to reach the hearts of the local people, the brothers needed to translate a publication into Luganda. In 1958, publishers began using the newly translated booklet, This Good News of the Kingdom. What a stimulus that proved to be. The work progressed, and in 1961, a new peak of 19 kingdom proclaimers shared in the ministry. In the course of his secular employment, Brother Kilminster met George Kadu, an enthusiastic Ugandan in his early 40s who spoke good English as well as his mother tongue, Luganda. George's interest in scriptural truth was aroused when he learned that God's name is Jehovah, and he began studying the Bible. Soon he was going along as an interpreter when Brother Kilminster preached from house to house. Then, in 1956, when the first baptism in Uganda took place in Lake Victoria near Entebbe, George symbolized his dedication to Jehovah. Sadly, not long thereafter, the kingdom work suffered a setback. Some foreign brothers returned to their home country when their work contracts expired. A few brothers were disfellowshipped, and several were stumbled by the unscriptural conduct of some in the congregation. Brother Kadu, though, loved Jehovah and knew he had found the truth. He stuck to it in favorable season and in troublesome season, and faithfully served as an elder until his death in 1998. Serving where the need is greater. The field in East Africa was large, and the need for kingdom preachers was great. There was also an additional challenge. The colonial government would not allow missionaries into the region. What could be done? In 1957, a worldwide call went out for publishers to serve where the need is greater. Spiritually mature brothers were encouraged to move where there was a greater need for kingdom publishers. The invitation was similar to the one the Apostle Paul saw in vision when a man entreated him, "Step over into Macedonia and help us." Acts 16:9-10. How did this modern-day invitation affect the progress of the kingdom preaching work in Uganda? Frank and Mary Smith responded to the call with an Isaiah-like spirit and immediately began preparing for their move to East Africa. The footnote reads, "A report on the life story of Frank Smith appeared in the Watchtower of August 1, 1995, pages 20 to 24. Frank's father, Frank W. Smith, as well as his uncle and aunt, Gray and Olga Smith, were among the first to preach in East Africa. Frank's father died of malaria when he was returning home to Cape Town just 2 months before Frank was born." End of footnote. In July 1959, they set sail from New York to Mombasa via Cape Town. Then they traveled by train to Kampala, where Frank obtained a work contract as a government chemist in the Geological Survey Department. The Smiths settled about 22 miles south of Kampala in Entebbe, a beautiful city on the shores of Lake Victoria that was virgin territory as far as the kingdom preaching work was concerned. They regularly attended meetings with a small but growing congregation in Kampala. Soon the Smiths introduced the truth to Peter Jabi, who held a responsible position in the Ugandan civil service, and to his wife, Esther. Earlier, Peter had received the book, What Has Religion Done for Mankind?, but did not pay attention to it because he was too busy with his secular employment and frequent job transfers. Then Peter was sent to mediate in a tense, complex land dispute between two tribal factions. He prayed, "God, if you help me, I will look for you." When the situation was resolved peacefully, he remembered his prayer and started reading the book. He realized that what he was reading was the truth and began searching for the witnesses. How happy he was to meet Frank Smith, who agreed to conduct a regular Bible study with him and his wife. As a result, this delightful couple were baptized, and they are still active kingdom proclaimers after more than four decades of faithful service. Other foreign brothers also responded to the call to serve where the need was greater. Some obtained work contracts that took them to places far away from the small nucleus of publishers in the Kampala congregation. One couple stayed in Mbarara, a small town in the rolling hills of southwest Uganda, some 180 miles from Kampala. They arranged to have the watchtower study and book study in their house. From time to time, however, they traveled all the way to Kampala or Entebbe to enjoy warm Christian fellowship. They also stayed in contact with the branch office in Luansha, northern Rhodesia, now Zambia, which had oversight of the kingdom preaching work in East Africa at the time. Harry Arnott, who was then overseeing that branch, served as zone overseer and visited Kampala to encourage the handful of publishers in Uganda. They deeply appreciated his loving concern. Another couple with a strong desire to serve where the need for kingdom preachers was greater were Tom and Anne Cook from England. Tom applied for employment in a number of countries and obtained a post as an education officer with the Ministry of Education in Uganda. His employment initially took him and Anne and their 4-year-old daughter Sarah to the small town of Iganga, about 80 miles east of Kampala. After the birth of Rachel, their second daughter, Tom and his family moved to Jinja, a town located at what is commonly called the source of the Nile. Later on, they moved to Kampala. The following is from page 77 of the printed edition.
Genuine Christian love touches hearts. Peter Jabe, born 1932, baptized 1965. Profile: an elder who helped translate publications during the ban. He and his wife Esther are parents of 4 grown children. When the first missionaries of Jehovah's Witnesses arrived in Uganda, there was much racial prejudice in the country, and most white people kept their distance from black Africans. The genuine Christian love of the missionaries touched our hearts, and they became very dear to us. During the 1970s, our family enjoyed associating and preaching with the missionaries, who lived some 40 miles away in Mbara. One day, on our way there, soldiers stopped our car. "You can continue if you want to die," said one of the soldiers. It seemed advisable to turn around and go home. However, as the days passed, we became increasingly concerned about the missionaries. We wanted to get to the missionary home as soon as we could to find out how they were. Security was very tight, but I used my authority in the hospital administration, along with a hospital sticker on the car, to help me get through the roadblocks. How relieved we were to find that the missionaries were safe. We replenished their food supplies and spent a few days with them. After that, we kept visiting them each week until it was safe for them to move to Kampala. The more trialsome the conditions became, the more we experienced the loving bond of our precious brotherhood. Returning to the account.
Sacrifices and blessings. What a fine contribution all these families made to the kingdom preaching work in Uganda. True, they had left behind a lifestyle and comforts to which they were accustomed. In return, though, they had the joy of seeing humble people change their way of life and respond to the kingdom good news. They also experienced the strong bond of Christian love that formed between their families and the local families as they gathered together for worship and happy association. We were impressed by the warm courtesy shown us in the ministry and the unassuming dignity of the people, recalls Tom Cook. Being able to have a small share in seeing the congregation grow was a very special privilege. When asked how he felt about his move, Tom replies, "We could not have had a better environment in which to serve Jehovah with a young family. We had the fine example of brothers and sisters from many countries, the company of loving and loyal local brothers, rich privileges of service, freedom from the influence of television, and exposure to the marvels of the African countryside. These were just a few of the blessings we enjoyed." The deep appreciation that those who served where the need was greater had for Christian association was also evident in their willingness to travel all the way to Kenya to attend circuit assemblies. This involved a 500-mile journey each way by bus or train. District conventions required even greater effort. In 1961, for example, Delegates from Uganda and Kenya attended a district convention in Kitwe, northern Rhodesia, now Zambia. That meant a four-day trip of over 1,000 miles on some of the worst, mostly unpaved roads in Tanganyika or Tanzania, recalls one of the delegates, and then another 4 days through sweltering and dusty African savanna to return to Uganda. It was quite an adventure, and our happy association with so many brothers and sisters was a great blessing. This was an arduous undertaking that required immense effort, but how spiritually refreshing it was. Missionaries do a vital work. In 1962, Uganda gained its independence from Britain. The following year, Brother Henschel visited Nairobi, Kenya, and discussed the possibility of sending missionaries to Uganda. Who would be assigned here? Tom and Bethel McLean, from the 37th class of Gilead, had recently arrived to serve in Nairobi. How surprised they were when they were then assigned to Kampala! But they willingly accepted the change and became the first Gilead-trained missionaries in Uganda. "Initially, we missed Kenya," admits Tom, "but soon we thoroughly enjoyed Uganda, the friendly people and the eager response to the witnessing work." Tom and Bethel had been learning Swahili in Kenya, but now they had to learn a new language, Luganda. They had little more at their disposal than dogged determination, reliance on Jehovah, and the help of a teach-yourself book. During their first month in Uganda, they devoted 250 hours to studying their new language, and during the second, 150 hours. This was in addition to the 100 hours they spent in field service. Gradually, they mastered their new tongue and enjoyed fine results in their ministry. In January 1964, Tom and Bethel were joined by Gilbert and Joan Walters from the 38th class of Gilead. Two other couples from the 38th class, Stephen and Barbara Hardy, and Ron and Jenny Bicknell, had been assigned to nearby Burundi, but because of visa problems, they too were assigned to Uganda. In short order, Kampala needed another missionary home. The congregation in Kampala was unforgettable. It included Brother Kadu and his family, John and Eunice Bwali, a special pioneer couple from northern Rhodesia, and their children, and Margaret Nienda and her young ones. The meetings were held in a place that was virtually in the open. "Passers-by could see and hear us, few as we were," recalls Gilbert Walters. The Bwale family lustily led the singing of kingdom songs in descant, without accompaniment, all in public view. It gave us courage to continue. Before long, Gilbert and Joan Walters were assigned to open a missionary home in Jinja, where no organized preaching had yet been done. Later, two more missionary homes were opened, one in Embali, near the border with Kenya, and the other in Embarara. The missionaries in those homes worked along with a number of special pioneers from other countries. The field was clearly white for harvesting, John 4:35. But what could be done to speed up the ingathering? The following is from page 82 of the printed edition.
"I felt I could not say anything." Margaret Nyende, born 1926, baptized 1962. Profile, the first Ugandan sister to accept the truth. Served as a regular pioneer for more than 20 years. Still an active publisher. "My husband enjoyed the Bible studies that Brother Kilminster conducted with him and thought that I should study as well because of my deep love for the Bible. So arrangements were made for John Bwali's wife, Eunice, to study with me. I loved what I was learning, but I was afraid of preaching to others. I was timid by nature and felt I could not say anything. But Eunice was patient with me, first by helping me to read just one scripture. Then, as we walked between calls, she taught me to prepare some comments on the scripture. With Jehovah's support, I overcame my fear. Shortly before my baptism, I was stunned when my husband rejected the truth and left me and our 7 children. Nevertheless, the brothers and sisters were wonderful. They provided practical and spiritual help to me and the children. A foreign couple who traveled to Kampala for the meetings would stop on their way and take the children and me in their car. I am very grateful that four of my children and their families have chosen to serve Jehovah. Eventually, I was able to serve as a regular pioneer. When arthritis reduced my mobility, I set up a literature table outside my house and talked to passersby. In this way, I was able to continue in the full-time ministry. Returning to the account.